What's up, boy?
What up, boy?
Man, intro dumb old man. I gotta get the stand up, man. Old school been in my head about this thing, boy. You know we gotta get in here and talk about these Buccaneers.
I got the beat.
Ah, you got the beat, then I got that word.
Get it?
Let's get it then. There goes my brother Dutch. Doing this thing with Pro Tools. Cooking up a track for my main man, old school. Number one podcast in Tampa Bay.
Why is that, Frank?
Cause we talking Tampa Bay. Old school on the mic, rapping about them Bucks. Keeping things in perspective, man, that's what's up. Always on the chill side, he's never abrupt. We talking charity, so we talking what the fuck. Taking off like a rocket with all the latest topics for the love of the Bucks. So nah, it ain't for profit. You can run with yours and I'll just run with mine. I'll never jump a ship, man, I'm a ride or die. Now tell me what the deal is, old school if the realest. If Dutch on the track, man, I know y'all gonna feel it. So tune in every week and next week just repeat. And listen, not for Frank, cause I be rocking to the beat. Now who's that on the mic? That's my man, old school.
Killing him with the podcast.
Ha, ha, he's so cool.
What the buck really matters, y'all?
Just remember that.
Now keep the music pumping.
Jay Dutch on the track.
Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're checking to see if we got levels. We got levels now. It's been a while since I've been on here. I'm going to fade this out. Welcome to whatthebuck.net. I am Old School, coming to you live from Valrico, Florida. Hopefully you guys in the chat room can hear me. Looks like everything is good on our side. I just finally reassembled the studio from our live panel that we did over at Wing House before the Washington Redskins game. Some of you guys were able to come out and attend that, which was a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys had a good time. We were fortunate enough to have Corey Long, Mark Cook. It was a joint podcast with Chris Fisher from Bucks Brief Podcast, and then, of course, Sean King, former cornerback for the Buccaneers. If you haven't got a chance to listen to that podcast, I would encourage you to go do so because there's some solid conversation. Not sure what levels means that way. I don't know whether it means they're up and down, but more words would be useful in the chat room if you can help. I appreciate that, though. Good looking out. At any rate, if you go back and listen to that podcast, we kind of tore apart a bunch of things going into that game. And having now lived through that massacre, you know, I think we got a chance to go back and really get a feel for what happened and why it happened. So that's going to be one of the things we do today. We're going to go through that game in some grueling detail. We'll have Mark Cook joining us at about 9:20 to talk about what his perspective was from the PeterReport.com perspective. I did get a chance to listen to some of Chris's podcast from Bucksbury Podcast. A great, great show if you haven't listened to that yet. He had Scott Reynolds on talking about the sort of Fire Lovey campaign, which started, I guess, two games ago and then died down after a victory and then came back up. And that's something we're going to talk a lot about tonight. So I'm going to do a couple of warnings. But before I do the warnings, I'm going to keep adjusting myself in this fucking chair until I can get to a point where I think the levels are good enough. I think Chris was trying to explain that the levels were low with his levels in multiple capital cases and stuff. So, but I'm not seeing any chat going on in the chat room, so I'm flying a little bit blind right now. So if you guys are in there, please do give me some feedback so I know what's going on. Anyway, welcome to the show. I want to thank the people who always take care of us. Wing House of Tampa Bay, obviously. Steakhouse Elite, Elder Ford. The crew of Blackbeard's Revenge for their partnership is phenomenal. You guys know how much we think about those guys. And I do want to say that our last tailgate, we had a pretty uninspiring treasure chest retrieval. So even though we had the same number of people attending the event. So if you're coming to our tailgates, we really do appreciate it. You guys listen to the podcast, you come to the tailgate. And I doubt that it is the people who are listening to this podcast that are doing this. But those tailgates cost us typically about $1,500 to put on, between $1,200 and $1,500 in direct spend. That means we have to get close to $2,200 to $2,500 to get to where we want to get for our charities. We used to have no problem doing that every time we did a tailgate. Now, with the same number of people, we've lost $300 one tailgate, and we made $200 one tailgate. The only one that we did a good job on was the first one where we made over $1,000 for one boy. So if you are at the tailgate, do please lead by example. Obviously, you know there's a lot of work that goes into those things, and to end up coming out of that with very little to the charity is a bit of a disappointment. Anyway, big shout-out to the people that we list to, Peter Report, Joe Bucks Fan, Bucks Brief, Sander P., Bucks Nation, Nick Hulis, and I always pronounce his name wrong. I actually reached out to Nick to try and get him on the show, but I was a little bit too late, I think. I think that right now, from a content perspective and articles, other than our own patches when he's able to write, I think the person I align most with right now is Nick. And I, it's not like I've ever done this for a popularity contest. This is season 10. You guys know that while I enjoy talking about the Bucks with you guys, I don't do this for any sort of ego trip, and I'm certainly not trying to force you guys to think what I think, because I've learned after 9 full seasons of doing this that that is never going to fucking happen. I've learned a couple of really important lessons, actually. I've learned that it really doesn't matter if you get shown on film sometimes. I've learned that it doesn't matter if you're talked with by people who have done the job or coached the job. Sometimes that doesn't matter. I've learned that by and large, and again, this is not directed most of the time to the people that are listening to this podcast, but as you listen to other fans and you may get frustrated the same way I do, I want you to try and use this as the counsel that I've used it as, and it's kept me from driving into a bridge embankment. Sometimes people just want to see what they see. Now, I am not going to candy coat this and say that this is no big deal. Okay, I traveled my fat ass up to D.C., and I had an amazing time, by the way, in the city. If you saw some of the pictures, if you're friends with me on Facebook, or if you followed the Twitter account, I think we had some of those pictures going out on Twitter. You guys saw us periscoping some live from FedEx. It was a great experience, and I'll talk a little bit about that, because I don't want this to be all about, oh, the sky is falling, oh, everything's horrible, oh, the Bucks are terrible, oh, we should fire everybody, oh, everyone should be cut. You know, and we can talk about any number of those pieces and parts, but I want to, what I've heard from you guys resoundingly is you actually like to see the experience the way that if you get a chance to travel, you do. So we had a great time in the nation's capital. My man Tailgate Ted, a fellow PFUFA member, hosted us at the Hail to the Redskins tailgate, which was phenomenal. We had a number of Bucks fans up. I got to tell you, this is probably in all the games I've traveled to, the best attended game by Buccaneers fans, which I did not expect. We had a good crew with us. And our girls, the girls that were in our group, actually won the Flip Cup tournament, defending the Buccaneers' honor. Our gentlemen did not win the Flip Cup tournament, but two of our members were not of our crew, and I have to admit that they were the weak links on our Flip Cup tournament. At any rate, when we did get into the game, obviously the jubilation was pretty solid, right? The 24-0 start was something I have not seen. And I remember talking to my man Bucks Attic, who's there. You guys know Chris. And I told him, I said, I've never been present for an ass-kicking. And I was sitting there nervous the whole time. It didn't matter when we were scoring. I was still nervous. And some of the Bucks fans around us were talking some shit to the Redskins fans. And I kept wanting to caution them to be careful, right? You've got to be careful because with this team, with a team that is bad, and we're still a bad team, we have moments of brilliance and moments of despair, as my friend Bill Anderson used to say. But with a team that is this bad, you've got to realize that you're only one step away from some serious pain. And I'm going to play a clip from a movie that I hope you guys recognize because it describes what I have talked about before and what I think we witnessed. It's from the great movie, some would say a documentary. They'd be wrong, but some would say a documentary, The Replacements.
Quicksand. Oh, shit. Hey, quicksand's a scary mother, man. I mean, first of all, it suck you right in, and even if you scream, you get all that muck in your mouth.
I don't think that's what Shane had in mind, Frank.
Huh?
That's not what he had in mind.
What are you talking about then, Cody?
Well, why don't you ask him?
Hey, what's up, Shane?
You're playing, and you think everything is going fine, but then one thing goes wrong, and then another, and another. And you try to fight back, but the harder you fight, the deeper you sink. Until you can't move. You can't breathe. Because you're in over your head. Like quicksand.
That cascade of problems that Shane Falco describes in The Replacements is something that bad teams witness all the time. And when you saw the first score on the read option where Cousins fakes the handoff and Will Golston bites so hard he almost chomps his own toes off and Cousins dances into the end zone, every Bucks fan everywhere should have said to themselves, oh shit, here it comes. The onside kick, the sudden inability to defend, the sudden inability to move the ball. Everything fell apart. Now, I do want to start a little bit of this with, I would encourage fans, I always do this, and it doesn't do any good, so I don't know why I do it, but what I feel is a reactionary move of fire everyone, we have to make an adjustment, because adjustments, as we have shown over the last few regimes, clearly make things positive. I would encourage not to do that. Now, that's not to say you sit back and just expect misery. I want to sit back because I actually have faith in the abilities of some of the folks involved in this program now. Now, I know many of you don't share that faith, and that's okay. And we could sit here and argue stats, and stats have been bleeding. They're all over Twitter. Number of penalties per game, penalty yards per game, through six games. Of course, that time window becomes very interesting when you use stats. But the same team that was up 24-0 lost that game in the same game, coached by the same coaches. The one argument I've heard that I think sticks and carries some weight is the clock management issue, which is something we can certainly talk about, and that's something Coach Smith has had a problem with in the past, and I can't argue that point at all. Do I think that that was the biggest deal? Do I think that the not being aggressive before the half was the biggest deal? No. Do I like that approach? Not really. I get it. Like, I understand it intellectually, but I don't necessarily share it. The play calling at the end, and I know that Coach Cutter went and said, hey, listen, the pitch was my bad. He owned that responsibility 100%. That doesn't matter. Many people are going to blame Coach Smith for that. But, again, I won't let facts get in the way of a good narrative. The way bad halftime sandwiches, maybe. You never know. Rick Hughes says we don't need to change coaches. We need our coaches to change. And it's an interesting juxtaposition of the words. I'm not sure exactly what you mean, Rick, but I'm interested in hearing what you think. Coaches change how? Coaches change what? We've seen a revolving door in the defensive secondary. We've seen them shuffling everyone around, some due to injury, some due to inability, some due to, ineptitude. Inability is the same. Something we've talked about for years. It's funny because when we started talking about the actual routes people ran, we started talking about them by route trees, things like that. No one was doing that. And now people are doing it, which is great, which means that the group has gotten more educated, which is terrific. When we used to talk about leverage by cornerbacks, the other folks didn't know what the hell we were talking about. When we talk about covering a slant route down here, we used to pound the table about this. And now people get it. Now, why our corners don't get it, I don't understand. Now, Mike Jenkins, I believe, was quoted saying it's on them. They do know. They are instructed. And for some reason, they're not doing it. Now, I know that someone whipped out Occam's razor. I forgot where we were. I think it was in a Twitter battle in Periscope about it being more logical, if all things were equal, that it was one person's problem, Coach Smith's, than the 11 guys on the field. That was an amazing reference to Occam's razor that was not correct, but still good to hear an Occam's razor reference. If your cornerbacks are instructed to do it and they don't, it's on your cornerbacks. Now, ultimately, the coaches have to get those guys to do their fucking jobs, right? That's the trick. The next stepping coach needs to step up. That's funny. So here's the fun part about that. And there's nothing funny about someone, kicking someone. We'll talk about penalties because that's another drum that's getting banged right now. I went back and I watched the coaches condensed and broadcast film, and I didn't get a chance to see Will step kick a guy's neck. I do know he got the three penalties. I know the one roughing the passer one looked fairly legit. I mean, it was a late. He brought him down late. It wasn't egregious, but it certainly was a penalty. But the word discipline and all that sort of shit gets tossed around. So we're going to go through penalty by penalty to talk about what those penalties were and what the impact they were had on the game. Now, penalties suck. I would rather have an aggressive penalty than a non-aggressive penalty. I hate stupid penalties like illegal shifts, formation problems. False starts, I fucking hate. I know they're going to happen a little bit on the road. Obviously, you're going to get that sort of stuff. I see Rick Hughes in the chat room has dropped in some more stuff here. I think their coaches need to learn how to manage timeouts better. I think our coaches need to know how to choose free agents better or don't use them at all. There's garbage on the market. I think we need to stop pulling Doug Martin out for massive stretches when he's eating off opposition. There's nothing against Sims because he was great. Sorry, guys. Hopefully, you guys can hear what I've got going on now. Let me check the Ustream feed. We got our audio back, and it looks like we finally don't have that annoying-ass feedback. All right, sorry about that. We'll get back where we were. Since we had a cable, actually, apparently, start to suck in the middle of the broadcast. Typical fringe media behavior, I know. Good call, Shook. Anyway, to Rick Hughes' comment, here we go. Let's address Rick's comment. And Rick's a longtime listener. I've talked to Rick a number of times on Facebook. To say these are vagueness. They learn how to manage timeouts better. I agree with the issue with regards to clock management. Now, sometimes people call timeouts because we're in a bad situation, and not calling the timeout would lead to worse results. That's a problem, but I would rather have that problem than the other problem. Now, that being said, you don't get any extra points for carrying timeouts into you at half. And pissing through them in the second half generally feels stupid. If you can't have your plays shuttled in properly, and I think this is going to the point that Rick brings up, we used to have a real problem with getting plays in on time, and we seem to be having that problem again now. If you don't know how to fucking call plays, it's a problem. On defense or on offense, I don't care. Get the play in. Get it in quickly. Get your personnel groupings in so that your quarterback can have time to make adjustments if he needs to. As far as the free agent things, guys, let's just pretend that we know enough to know that free agents take a lot of fucking risks. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. We've had multiple coaching staffs, multiple scouting staffs. They've all done a relatively shitty job at times. We only remember the ones that bust. We don't remember the ones that stick. I really wish that wasn't a drum that got beaten here. It's not just garbage on the market. One man's trash is another man's treasure. We all also know that. We know that people that get cut aren't necessarily horrible. We can't use that tautology that people think exists as, well, if they were cut by so-and-so, how good can they be? Oh, I don't know. When they go to another team and play really well, they're pretty fucking good, aren't they? We always bang that drum when it's one of the guys we cut. If some other asshole will use that methodology and didn't pick up anyone we cut, guess what? All those guys we talk about being great after we cut them wouldn't have gotten to be great. We've talked about it for 10 fucking years. It is not just about the talent. All these guys are talented. Now, as far as the issue with the running backs, I actually had no issue with the way they're spelling guys right now. Doug Martin's playing great football. Charles Sims is coming in playing good football. I like Martin better than Sims, but you got to spell him. I had no problem with them pulling Martin on the final. It wasn't the final. Second to final series. Right, they gave him a chance to get it in. He couldn't get it in. Thought he might have been gassed. They spelled him. I had no problem with that. I have a problem in general with the play calling on that particular issue or that particular series. Because I think when you're that close and you have a Mike Evans and you don't give him one single chance, then you fucked up. If you have a chance that close and you have an athletic quarterback, listen, I'm not trying to say that Jameis Winston is Cam Newton. He's not. But he has functional athleticism and he has an amazing desire to win. We've talked about it before. Move the pocket, get him in space. If you want to combine that with the Mike Evans play, if you want to run on first down and give Doug a chance to pile it in there, I get it. Tell your big guys, hey, listen, fat guys, win this for me. They don't do it, okay. Second down's your play action down. It's a neoclassical play action down. It'll freeze the linebackers. Boot option, get Evans to the back pylon, give him one underneath route, safe throw, or tuck it and fucking run. Give your quarterback a chance to be the hero that you fucking drafted him to be. If you're looking for a leader, let him fucking lead. I don't understand why that is confusing. Now, the play call of the toss was just a bad call, right? You don't want to give the team a chance to track that down because it wasn't supported by anything else. And Cutter went into that in detail in his press conference. But that's okay. Not going for it on fourth down, though. This is where it's going to get interesting. You're up by three. You're on their four-ish yard line. Let's say we're inside the five. It doesn't really matter where we're at. I know some people say, well, on the two, it's one thing, and on the four, it's another. I don't really think so in this particular case, but I understand the rationale. Fourth down, you try one of those other things that we were just talking about to get in the end zone. You let your team know, listen, this is a make-or-break-it play for the fucking season at this point, guys. We have a chance to get to 500. We haven't seen 500 in ages. You had been stomping a mud hole in the ass of this team all day. Now you're choking. Fucking fix it. I don't care if you don't put a wide receiver on the field and you want to just try and man up on someone. I'm okay with that. Fine. But by God, go out swinging. I know that classical coaching says get your points, get your guaranteed points. That makes them go the length of the field. I get it. I really do. But sometimes you have to go against that grain. Alex J. wants to know what my thoughts are on Mike Jenkins. Is there a cornerback out there better than him that we can pick up, or do you think this is more of a combination setup? You know what? It's a fair question. Let me wrap up my thoughts about this this final possession, and then I'll go to that, Alex. But I would rather have gone for it. Now, I know hindsight play calling is a pain in the ass. I bitch about it all the time. But even at the game, I was talking to Chris about it. I think you go for it there. And then on the defensive side, your aggressive play is first down. Now, here's what happens, guys. I'm going to run this back for you, let you know what happens. If Lovie Smith gets overly aggressive instead of going into a shell, you blitz on first down and they get a 50-yard route. And people go, why the fuck would you blitz there? You want to make sure everyone catches everything underneath you. You guys know this story. We're just angry. We're miserable fans who have been losing for a decade, and so we're going to bitch, and we want a fast change. Fast changes get you a decade of fucking miserable. The goal isn't to be as good as Raheem Morris and Shiano were, guys. So we can use those stats all you want to, but that sucked. The goal isn't to get to Gruden's 9-7, because guess what? That didn't get us back to the fucking Super Bowl either. The goal is to build a foundation that allows you to have 10 years of absolute competitive gameplay. Being the Packers, being the Patriots, being one of those teams, you want to get to there. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, guys, we've got some exciting things happening. We really do. For the first time in a long time, I'm incredibly excited by our offense. But let me answer Alex J's question first, and we'll talk about the offense. And it, I think Mark Cook is supposed to call in at some point here. He may have forgotten. I was supposed to message him, but since I had a microphone die, I got all preoccupied making the show work and all. So I'll hit him up. But let's talk a little bit about Alex's questions. I think Mike Jenkins is playing terrible football. I think most of our corners are. I think that they're... Oh, there he is right there. I take it back, Cook. I was about to say you had forgotten all about me, man. How are you doing?
I always... I don't have your number for this show on my phone, so I have to go back through all of my messages from you or from Spence to try and find the number. So that's what took me so long. Sorry.
Well, I apologize that we're not important enough to make it into your contacts database, but I will endeavor to correct that next time we go have some sort of a beverage.
Oh, well, I'm sorry that I'm not important enough for you to message me to remind me what the phone number is.
No, I'm only doing about 30 things at one time. I'm sorry I can't stop that and call you, Mark.
Yeah, I know. It's tough to talk and do anything else. I get
it. Oh, man. Says the guy who's only really done radio in 13-minute segments. Great.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, welcome to the show, Mark. Mark Cook of PewterReport.com, the editor-in-chief and sometimes the editor-in-chief at MarkCook1970 on Twitter. And also, too, because some people say also and two at the same time, and I don't understand why. He is often tewiting from the at Pewter Report Twitter, I believe, based on the tone that I read. Mark, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. I was just getting mesmerized by this GOP debate tonight. It's just fascinating.
Did Trump finish the sentence yet?
You know what? They haven't let him talk a whole lot, which doesn't hurt my feelings.
Holy
Sorry.
Shit!
Sorry, there's a lot of Trump people that are probably mad at me right now.
Someone's going to get fired.
Yeah.
So before we subvert this into a GOP debate conversation, we've got a bunch of angry Bucks fans. Obviously, Pewter Report is well-respected as sort of the heart and soul of Buccaneer-focused media. I mean, we got a bunch of good generic media, and then we got some specialization in the generic media. But from a Bucks fan's perspective, and you know that that's where I come from, it's
right.
always been Pewter Report for as long as I can remember.
Well,
and,
much appreciated.
Well, and it's true, and that's not blowing smoke. These guys have heard me say it for years, and before you guys came on the show, it's just been true. That doesn't mean I always agree with you guys, and
right,
that's okay.
Right.
But by God, you guys are connected. You understand what's going on. You're behind the scenes. Sometimes there's things you can say, and sometimes there's things you can't.
Right.
I'm not going to make you go and defend Scott's position on firing Lovie Smith, but I am going to ask you, what is your sense about the team's perspective with regards to their coach, and what is your feeling as a seasoned journalist at One Buck Place about the feelings of the Glazers towards their regime?
Well, first let me touch on the Glazers. You know, it's impossible to get any sort of sense. I mean, as a media member, we see the Glazers, you know, usually leaving the games. You know, they park underneath the stadium in their private area. You know, they don't speak except usually twice a year. You know, once at the night practice, which they didn't have this year, so they spoke at One Buccaneer Place instead. And, you know, usually after the end of the year, they'll speak, especially if there's some sort of major change. Of course, you know, they speak when there's a big, you know, signing or draft pick deal, like as a Ring of Honor induction kind of deal. But again, you know, trying to get a handle on their thought process is virtually impossible. You know what? And if I'm a Buccaneer fan, you know, do I want Jerry Jones or do I want Joel and Brian and Ed Glazer as owners? You know, and I don't mean that from a spend money or run the team standpoint. I mean it from, you know, a look at me standpoint. You know, Arthur Blank and his cool little mustache coming down on the field. As a fan of a football team, that's not really the kind of owner I would like. But at the same time, you would like to hear from the owner a little bit. So kind of somewhere in between is what I would prefer. But we don't get that, and that's their prerogative. They own the team. They do things as they see fit. So what I'm basically saying is, you know, there's really no way to gauge the pulse of exactly what the Blazers are thinking. The only thing we can go by is what they've done in the past, and that is after the season, they evaluate things and decide. Now, that doesn't mean they're not right now evaluating things. And we know that they were evaluating Greg Schiano and Mark Dominic before the season ended, and probably Raheem Morris during that 10-game streak, because they didn't wait long on that Monday after the final game to make their decision on both of those guys. So I can assure you it's probably being talked about amongst themselves, but as far as the media goes, we just don't have a handle on anything there. So, again, going based on the past, you know, I would not expect, and Scott neither would expect the Blazers to make a change in the middle of the season, and I don't think they will. I think they'll let this season play out, take a look at where this team is sitting, you know, January 1st or 2nd, and then make a decision on do they continue to go forward with Lovie Smith or do they make a change. As far as the players go, first time to really be in the locker room, you know, since the loss. I took Monday off. It was my birthday, so I didn't go that day.
Happy belated birthday. Absolutely. Forgot to mention that. Sorry, Scott.
I appreciate that. And I, you know, so it was my first opportunity to go in the locker room today. And honestly, you know, I mean, it wasn't a morgue. It wasn't anything like that. It was a typical Wednesday afternoon in the locker room. You know, I mean, players were frustrated. You could tell when we asked them about, you know, the games and things like that. Had a good opportunity to talk to Dirk Cutter. I've got a quick blog I put up right after his press conference, you know, where this guy took full accountability and responsibility for that third down call. And, you know, I'll tell you what, he is a breath of fresh air as far as a coordinator or a coach goes. And we're fortunate to get him once a week because he really, you know, doesn't hold a lot back. And even when he does, you can kind of tell what he's thinking, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
When he bites his tongue, you can tell which way he would probably go on that. So love listening to Dirk talk. I'll put up a transcript a little bit later for people who don't want to go just on Buccaneers.com and watch it again. But I'll put up a transcript a little bit later of the full press conference so people can kind of read what he had to say. But he really took – I mean, the first thing he said is, look, 100%, 1,000%, whatever you want to call it, it's on me for a bad call. I screwed it up. It's on me. And I'll tell you what, Derek, when I say a breath of fresh air, you know, and I'm not knocking Lovie. He's a professional coach, been doing this a long time. But you know what? I think he could win some fans over if he stood at the podium and took Dirk's approach a little bit. You know what I mean? Fans don't want to hear this team is getting better. Fans don't want to hear, you know, we're close. Hang on, guys. You know, we're going to turn the corner soon enough. You know, they want to hear somebody take responsibility for, you know, blowing a 24-point lead. And, you know, if I were Lovie Smith, I would take a page out of Dirk's playbook or quote book, whatever you want to call it, because you know, I think Dirk, when people read or watch his press conference, and if they haven't in the past, they should, and those that have seen it and listened to it today, you know, I think they can appreciate his honesty. You know, people tend to forgive when somebody admits they made a mistake, but, man, if you just keep trying to, you know, throw some cliches at the wall, you know, that frustrates fans more than anything. I don't know that coaches and players give the fans enough credit for knowing football. You know what I mean? Yeah,
there's a good reason for that.
A breakdown, you know, a cover three or, you know, a single high safety or zone blocking schemes versus man blocking schemes. But as fans of football, they understand the general dynamics of the game, and they can see with their own eyeballs, whether they're in attendance or on TV, you know, what's going on to a degree with their football team. And they want accountability, and Dirk gives that. I wish Lovie would do a little bit more of that personally.
Well, I don't know that they're going to hire a PR person for Lovie. The difference in this is winning or losing. And I think that while I appreciate what you're saying, I think PR can help. Fans at the end of the day really only care about wins and losses. And then after the wins and losses, they only care about championships. Because Bill Belichick doesn't have a good PR guy. Bill Belichick's press conferences are a fucking joke.
Yep.
But Bill Belichick wins. And so no one cares.
Right.
Coordinators can usually come away with a more honest position. Because generally speaking, at the end of the year, the head coach is going to be the one who gets it hung on him. Every once in a while, coordinators get thrown on the bus. I mean, Detroit just threw about six coordinators under the bus, and they promoted a guy named, like, Jim Bob Cooter or something.
Jim Bob Cooter.
Well, I'll tell you what, that takes some balls to promote that guy, especially with the
Detroit,
arrest record.
I mean, you know,
but in Detroit.
Atlanta or anything, come on.
But at any rate, you know, the thing that I can't get a sense for is, and there was a huge hubbub, and I don't know if it was legit or not, right? You know, fans sometimes overreact, and I know my man Bucks Brief had put this out there. The smiling by Gerald McCoy and the smiling by Akeem Spence, and it seems like fans want a pound of flesh when the Bucks screw up and lose. They want them, you know, kicking rocks and banging their head into the wall. And this is a job, right? They all know they screwed up. And if they screw up enough, guess what? They're unemployed.
Right.
You know?
Yep, absolutely.
At any rate, let's talk about the injury situation. For some reason during the game, I didn't realize how dire our wide receiver situation was, because during the game, we were absolutely beating the living dog shit out of these guys, and it was absolutely exciting to be a Bucks fan in Washington celebrating your team, stomping in the soul of another team. It was wonderful, right? And then all of a sudden I look up, and we're putting the trainer in at wide receiver. We have a tackling dummy out there that someone's pushing around.
The peanut vendor was lined up in the slot at one point.
It was very
the third quarter.
It was very, very awkward. Now, I didn't get a chance to listen to Dirk's presser, which I'm going to go back and do. And I know that you've said this to me before. If you listen to one, listen to his. But a lot of fans are saying that the collapse, they're jumping on the defense for the collapse, and that makes sense. But just like the defense collapsed in the second half, our offense didn't exactly do a whole lot of shit in the second half either. Now, do you think that was a vestige of the injuries, or do you think that was a matter of adjustments? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different thoughts. It could be that Lovie want them to take their foot off the gas a little bit. I don't necessarily believe that. But, you know, Dirk talked about it some today, and even Lovie did in the last couple of days. Look, when you're down two receivers, you know, throw half your playbook out the window, honestly. I mean, think about how that eliminates different formations and things that you do. All of a sudden, you know, you can't run three, four wide receiver sets, obviously. You know, that goes out the window, and it really limits what you're able to do. Also, the Redskins, you know, the Bucks didn't get a ton of possessions in the second half. I think they had one three and out there in the third quarter, something like that. You know, when they did get it, but the defense was giving up some longer drives and things like that. Certainly the onside kick didn't help, but, you know, that gave Washington an extra possession that the Buccaneers missed out on. So, you know, but they still moved the football. I mean, they still ended up with, I think, 487 yards of offense. The first quarter they had nearly 200 yards of offense. The second quarter, not quite as much. But you know, they did a decent job of moving the football in the second half. But capitalizing and scoring touchdowns is what they weren't able to do. And had they been able to do that, obviously we'd be talking a different tune. Yeah, we'd still be complaining that the defense needs to tighten up this and that. But we'd be sitting here looking at a 3-3 team, and people would be a heck of a lot more excited than a 2-4 team. So. But, I mean, you know, you've coached football, you've been around it. You know, when you're down to literally two wide receivers in a football game, you know, your playbook changes drastically. I kind of compare it to back in 2011 in that London game when you know, they went into that game without LeGarrette Blount. Then I think it was Ernest Graham blew out his Achilles, and, you know, Eric Lohr got hurt, so. You know, they were down to Craig Lumpkin. Again, you know, there's so many plays in a playbook, and many of them call for, you know, three receivers or, you know, obviously two healthy running backs, like in the, you know, out in London. So, I mean, it changes things. I think that was probably the biggest part of things. And certainly Washington did a few things maybe to adjust a little bit. But, you know, they still were able to move the ball at will when they had time. And the momentum shift was a big part of it, too. I mean, you know, I've always said, and I think I said it even last Wednesday when we were at the Wing House, you know, certain teams walk out on football fields expecting to win. You mentioned the Patriots early. You know, the Buccaneers walk out hoping they can win and hoping they don't screw things up. And, you know, and as the noose gets a little tighter, as Washington brought that score from 24-0 to 7 to 14 to 21, you know, you start tightening up a little bit. And, again, that killer instinct or that winning mentality was missing a little bit, although I thought that drive in the fourth quarter when they were backed up, the drive that they should have punched it in for a touchdown to seal the game, I thought that was a hell of a drive. I mean, that was
absolutely
a hell of a response and answer. So I think the offense is getting a little bit of that attitude, but defensively, obviously, they're still lacking there too.
Well, and you know, you said a lot there. The offense did almost enough to win, right? Here we are at the game. I'm at FedEx Field, and Doug cracks off that run, and as he's running, and I'm literally in that corner of the field. I'm on the Buck sideline. I'm about 10 rows up. He's running towards our side, and I see, I can't remember the cornerback's name who pulled his hamstring on the play. Good cornerback, young guy, who tracked him down. And I see the angle, and I'm like, God dang it, that angle's good. Doug, you got to hit the jets. You got to jump. You got to do something, because if we get tackled,
right,
I don't know that we have the intestinal fortitude to get this done.
Right.
And so the Bucks fans around us, he gets to the yard. They start, you know, hey, you guys are quiet now, chanting and cheering. And as a Bucks fan, I played the quote from the Replacements earlier about quicksand, right? You just knew we'd find a way to snatch fucking defeat from the jaws of victory again.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
and go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I didn't have anywhere to go with it. I'm just lamenting. I don't like the play calling and that thing, but I already went through that in detail, and I'm sure that Cutter would feel the same way. In hindsight, play calling is always stupid, but if you've got Mike Evans, how he doesn't get a sniff in the red zone is beyond me.
Well, but I mean, again, you know, there's 100 plays they can call on those three plays that they ran, and you know, the first one was a decent run. You know, the second one, you know, it's just one guy. He can't get past or he scores there going off the right side. But it was a third down call. Again, I screen captured Monday morning the TV broadcast showing the blue line where the ball was. And then you see Charles Sims literally taking the pitch at the 7-yard line.
Sure.
And you think to yourself, my God, Doug Martin just last, or not last week, but 2 weeks ago, same situation against Jacksonville, goes up and over, scores a touchdown. And, you know, again, in hindsight, you know, I know that Dirk would probably have Doug in there, and they probably would have went right at the defense. And in fact, somebody else, I wish I knew who, but somebody else screen captured from the all 22 view, from the end zone view. And my gosh, the A and the B gaps are absolutely wide open as the play, you know, as the play happens. I mean, you know, Jameis could have just slid off of Holly's rear, either left or right, and got that ball in. I mean, there's you know, again, and Jameis said it today too, Derek. He said, look, if Chuck, meaning Sims, spins off that guy and scores, then no one's even questioning the play call. It was a great play call, and that's, you know, that's the thing. But the fact is it didn't work, and so here we are 3 days later still discussing, you know, what should have been. But again, you know, look, if somebody would have told me before the game the Buccaneers would have 487 yards of offense, the defense would score a defensive touchdown, Doug Martin would have over 100 yards, they would run for 190 or whatever it was, Jameis Winston would not turn the ball over, he would be 21 of 29 for 297 yards, and Mike Evans would have 164 yards receiving, I would have bet everything I had, everything you had, everything anybody had, that they won that football game. And that makes it that much more difficult to accept because of all the positives, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, that happened in that game, that they came away with a loss. And but I understand the frustration. I mean, look, if Doug can stay in bounds on that long run, even if he gets tackled at the 3-yard line, you know what I mean, then you can you know, force them to use some timeouts, burn some clock. Maybe they don't have time to score. I don't know. The one thing I did hear, and again, immediately I was saying, yeah, you got to kick the field goal. You got to make it a 6-point. That way they've got to score a touchdown to win the game. But in hindsight, somebody brought up a point, and I don't remember who it was, get on Twitter. You know, if you don't, if you miss it, and you know, you force them to go 95 yards, and maybe Jay Gruden's not so aggressive in his play calling. Maybe he's playing for the tie for the field goal. Then you don't know what happens in overtime. But again, this is what makes sports great and frustrating and heartbreaking and exhilarating at the same time, is again, 3 days later, we can sit here and debate what they should or shouldn't have done. But again, Dirk Cutter was the first to admit today, you know, he would love to have that back. But apparently what it was is they checked, that play they ran was a check play. But people say, why didn't they check out of it? Well, that was the check that was made. Again, there were some headset issues with Dirk to Jameis. Dirk could hear Jameis, but Jameis couldn't hear Dirk at times during the second half. So,
damn,
you know,
Bill Belichick. Oh wait,
that was the, you know, but that was the check play. And another egregious thing, if you look back on it, is their inability to have a timeout late in the game. Again, you know, normally you have a timeout there, you call a timeout, because what happened is Washington ran some guys on late after the check play had been called. And so there really was an opportunity to check out of it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, sure.
Again, you'll have to listen to the transcript. Dirk kind of explains it a little bit. It made a little bit more sense, but it's still a terrible way to lose a football game.
Well, and I think as you guys continue to break down things, I know your content has continued to increase in volume and detail, which is good with the additional writers you brought on. Breaking down, and I mentioned this earlier, I'm not in the Fire Lovey camp. I think it's absolutely ludicrous, to be honest, and
mm-hmm.
I get why people say it. Sometimes they really believe it, and sometimes they don't. I think you guys, I want to believe you guys really believe it, but
no, Scott absolutely believes it. You know, I'm not as on the bandwagon as he, but he makes some great points when you look at, you know, I mean, Lehman Bennett has one less win than Lovie Smith through however many games it is so far. I mean, Lehman had three, Lovie's got four, and you know, and Lehman was let go after 2 years, and Greg Shannon was let go after 2 years. I understand the revolving door thing can be detrimental to a team, but I also put it in the context of a marriage. I mean, how long do you stay in something if you know that if you believe that it's bad? Nobody really knows. Can it be repaired? Can the marriage be repaired, or the relationship, whatever it is? But you know, if you feel that it can't be, you know, you got to cut ties and try something else. And so Scott makes a lot of good points. You know what I mean? As far as, you know, when you look at facts through these 20 games or however many it's been for Lovie so far.
When you look at stats, not facts, those are two different things. Stats are simply data. Their interpretation leads to conclusions. That doesn't make them facts. But I understand your point. And like I said, I'm not trying to take Scott to task. If I were going to do that, I'd invite him on. But my frustration is, at some point, you have to stop going with the next hot chick who might not have gonorrhea, right? It's like we move from one to the next. We think, oh, we'll just change this one thing because that's easier. Well, guess what? We did that so much. This team was in shambles, right? And so it is not going to be an overnight sensation. Well, yes, it is. Look what Dan Quinn's doing. Look what so-and-so's doing. Look at them after 3 years. We can't keep looking in six-month chunks. It doesn't work, right?
Right.
But I want to ask you a question about Mike Jenkins because the secondary is a concern. Alex J. in the chat room asked earlier, what is your opinion about the staff that we have, or the roster, the players we have, specifically Mike Jenkins? Is it the case that there's really nothing better on the shelves anywhere, right, than Mike Jenkins?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where it's at. I mean, you can play Lee DeKemper from Joe Buck's fan, as much as I hate to give him credit, ha-ha, if he's listening, but he made a good point on Doom's show today. I mean, you know, you can play musical chairs, but there's, you know, it's still the same chairs. You can rearrange the furniture all you want. You can try different combinations in the living room, but in the end of the day, it's still the same furniture. And that's a good point, you know. I mean, you know, and they've tried different combinations. Greg Allman of the Times, we call him Rain Man. The guy's brilliant with the tweets and does a tremendous job. Love Greg to death. Guy put out a stats or a tweet today showing the different combinations they've had in the secondary, and it's really mind-boggling. But they're trying to find a combination that works. Now, you know, I'm almost to the belief that you go back to the basics. You put Werner on corner, and you put Banks on the corner, and you put Sterling Moore back at the slot, and Jennings and Jenkins become your backup corners the way that it was originally intended, and roll with it and see what happens and see if they can develop the chemistry back there. But again, look, Lovie and Leslie and Gilbert have decided that that's not the best way. So it's their team. They do what they want to do. You know, I would almost just kind of go back to simple basics and, hell, run more cover two. Everybody laments about the fact that, you know, cover two, when they're not running a ton of cover two. Maybe they should be running more cover two. Maybe they should, you know, come up and make tackles. Maybe they should go to man when they get inside the 10-yard line and play tight coverage.
They were set up to.
And they, you're right. They are. I mean, when you get in, Lovie said it, when you're inside the 5-yard line, it doesn't matter if you want to call it zone or man.
You're up on them.
It's the man.
Yeah, it's man. It's man, man under for sure. And for some reason, and this is a good point Scott mentioned on Bucks Brief the other night, we talked about it before in Jacksonville, we talked about it in Houston. When you're inside the 5, right, if you're inside the 10, really, but call it the 5, you cannot allow a free release. You cannot allow the simplest throw on the field. You can it's unacceptable. A high school cornerback understands that. So why in the hell does our professional set of defensive backs and combination linebackers not understand a precept of coverage, right?
Yeah.
That's got to be someone's fault, and it's the players or the coaches or both of them. But hell, something's got to change, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. You know, the scheme wise, there. I mean, you know, and you wonder. And this thing is, as much whatever people want to say about Lovie Smith, he's not going to throw players publicly under the bus.
No.
What goes on behind closed doors, we don't know. And you know, we might know a little bit from talking to some players off the record, but it's not like we can report it. But you know, it's you know, at some point we can blame Lovie all we want, but at some point either the talent is not there, either they do not have the talent to be quality NFL secondary people, you know, or they're just not listening to what their coaches are saying. Because I can't imagine in a million years Lovie Smith and Gilbert teaching these guys, as you said, you know, be playing on the 3-yard line, to be playing, you know, five yards off, and have your safeties, you know, practically with their heels on the end line, which that wasn't the case because that was McDougal that was kind of manned up with Reed on that last touchdown. Levante probably shared some responsibility there, maybe, I don't know. It also looked like maybe there was a touch of confusion on the left side, if you're the offense, where they had a bunch set over there. And, you know, I don't know. You know, again, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. We can evaluate the film all we want, but, you know, we're not coaches, and we don't know what the play calls were. So it's hard really to put the blame there. But, you know, it's one or the other. It's either the players aren't doing what they're coached, or there's just not enough talent there to do it. Because, as you said, I mean, a high school defense, you know, plays that differently than the Buccaneers did on Sunday.
Well, it's brutal, and obviously the fans are fired up. I'm not gonna beat on that dead horse the way a lot of folks are. But let's train our guns towards Atlanta. What do you expect to see out of the Bucs this week? What do you expect to see differently? Are we gonna just start running the wishbone given our inability to staff up with wide receivers? You know, what can we expect to see on the field come Sunday?
Man, this is a tough week. You know, I don't even want you to ask me for a prediction because, you know, this could go a thousand different ways, to be honest with you. I mean, I said it on Sunday in a story that I wrote, and maybe I was writing a little emotionally, or maybe I tweeted it. I don't even remember. But, you know, this is the kind of loss that could, you know, implode this team to a degree. I mean, this is the type of loss where, you know, the players maybe say, you know, we can't do it, or the coaching staff. I don't know. You know, I don't know. They could get blown out by 30 points in this game, or the offense could go toe-to-toe and score for score, or maybe something clicks on the defense. I just don't have – I can't even – this is in all the years of doing this, the 5 years that I've covered the Buccaneers, this is the game that I probably have the least clue, and even – it would totally be a guess on anything, because I have no feel for exactly what's going to happen. Maybe by Friday, being in the locker room again tomorrow – and talking to players, you know, you kind of get a vibe sometimes. And I've got some contacts, you know, inside the building that honestly usually gives me a pretty good indication of how they feel the team is doing during the week. But at this point, man, I just can't even begin to tell you. I mean, you know, the Falcons haven't exactly lit up the scoreboard the last couple of weeks, I don't think, if I'm remembering right.
No, they haven't.
But they've got explosive players. And I actually asked Dirk Cutter today. I asked him, I said, is it overblown when a former coach or when a coach faces their former team as far as how much intel you can give? And he said yes and no. I mean, look, he says, I know the two tackles on the team, they're there. I know Matt Ryan, I know Julio, I know Roddy. But it's a different staff. It's a different, you know, offense. And so, you know, what they're going to do, you know, he says, I'll tell the defensive coaches what I know, but I don't know how much I can honestly help and how much that it does help. So
sure.
This could be a strange game, and nothing would surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if Tampa Bay beats them. I think Tampa Bay is capable. And people say, well, God, if Kirk Cousins carves you up, what is Matt Ryan going to do? But, you know, who knows? I mean, we've seen this Buccaneer defense. You go back to Greg Schiano. Remember how well they tended to accept his very last game as head coach? Remember how well they seemed to come up against Drew Brees? I mean,
yep.
They would get beat pretty bad, and you got Drew Brees coming up, and you think, oh, man, they're just going to get destroyed by Brees. And there were a lot of close games, particularly those home games against the Saints during Schiano's time. So I can't put my finger on the pulse of this team whatsoever right now.
Well, and it's funny, you know, a lot of people talked about, you know, this is going to leave a scar, and this could be a play that implodes, a game that implodes. You know, if you're a coach and you have one of these situations happen, you've got a couple of options. Right, you can sit back and lament and wallow and do this sort of bullshit, or you can use it as a galvanizing moment. Because I honestly don't believe at the NFL level any of these guys are not good players. They may not be as good as someone else who plays at the NFL level, but they're all really damn good at this thing called football.
Yeah.
And the coaches included, right? Even though I may use hyperbole from time to time and say someone sucks, you guys understand it's all relative. So at some point, you have to realize this is a profession, and someone has to determine that losing is no longer acceptable. If you could go out and hang 24 points on a team in the first half, you can damn well do it in the second half.
Sure.
If you can go and stop them from scoring in the first half, you can stop them in the second half. This comes down to the ability for the players to step up and do their jobs and the coaches to enforce and make them do that. So I agree with you. I mean, this is one of those games. I don't think we're going to see a 13-10 game.
No.
I don't think that's what we're going to see. I think there's going to be a lot of points scored. But what I don't understand, and I'm not saying it's time to give up the season, because I am not that guy, because math tells me so, right?
Right.
But at some point, Coach Smith has to get these guys to understand the urgency that is real. And he may not feel it because he believes that regardless, he's going to be back and he knows that the Glazers are going to stay the course and so on and so forth. But barely losing doesn't help you.
Right.
Right. At some point, you've got to try and win. And I think a lot of the people are saying, you know, playing not to lose is really the big culprit here. Whether it's the conservative gameplay at the end of the half, the pissing away of timeouts, the field goal instead of going for it on fourth down, the relatively low ratio of blitzes to non-blitzes if you can't get pressure with your front four, the lack of press coverage, right? There is a pattern here, and this is not surprising. This is the way Lovey coached, the way Dungy coached, the way Herm coached when he coached, right? The way Tomlin coaches from time to time, but he's had really great assistants that said, fuck you, I'm going to do it my way. You know, this shouldn't surprise fans, but at some point he's got to flip that switch, I think, Mark. I don't know about your thoughts.
No, he does, but you know what? And I left right before Lovey's press conference today. I had to pick up my son early from school today. So, but I listened to the press conference on the way home, and Leo Howe asked Lovey about, you know, he brought up the Derrick Brooks, Warren Sapp 1995 deal or 96 deal when they were in San Diego, when, you know, they just said, screw it, we're tired of this. Some, you know, it's got to change. And
right.
And I think the 620 cut it off at that point. They don't usually do the full thing, so I didn't really get there the full answer. But you know what? You know, we can say Lovey needs to do this, but at some point, leaders on this team,
yep,
whether they have a C on their chest or not, somebody's got to step up. And I've said it, and people can call me a homer all they want about Jameis Winston being a Florida State fan, but this is a guy who's getting close, I think, to being able to assert himself as that type of guy. Again, he can't call a team meeting, right? Okay, he's a rookie quarterback. But, and I'm not saying team meetings do a whole lot, but, you know, but like Warren and Derek said, and Derek told us that story the day that they announced his Ring of Honor and they did the big hullabaloo or whatever at One Buck Place. He came in and talked to the print media one-on-one, and he talked about that day, and he remembers it specifically. And you know, they need that moment, and whether it's Lovey getting through to them, and I think it was Derek I heard on the show too talk about, you know, about Tony Dungy, you know, finally telling these guys during his first year in 96, you know, this crap is unacceptable. You know what I mean? It's got to change or you'll be playing somewhere else or won't be playing at all. And whether Lovey has to flip the switch or these players do, I tend to think it's got to come from the players and somebody. Has got to say enough of this crap, you know, that we can't continue to do this. And whether they want to do it for the fans, whether they want to do it for the Glazers, or whether they just want to do it for themselves, you know, somebody's got to step up and say it ends. And I don't know if they're ready to do that yet. Maybe it happens this week, but, you know, again, I'm going by what I saw in the locker room today. I didn't want to see people in the locker room crying. I mean, they got to get over it. One loss can't turn into two, as Lovey says all the time. That's very true, but I'm hoping at some point somebody steps up and becomes that leader. And I think it's getting close on the offensive side of the ball, but I don't know where it comes from on the defensive side of the ball. I think Gerald does what Gerald does, but Gerald is what he is. I mean, he's not Warren Sapp as far as the attitude and those things go, and that's not to knock, you know, him. You can't force yourself to be something that you're not. Lavonte David's not necessarily that guy. Quan's too young at this point, so I don't know where it comes from. You know, maybe a Clint McDonald has to step up as a guy who has a Super Bowl ring, or somebody along those lines has to step up. I mean, it can't be Jacquee Smith and George John. I mean, who is it? Who is that guy? And you know, maybe it's going to take them bringing in somebody from the outside during free agency next year, and that, you know, that sets foot in that building and says things change. Look, Derek, I think it was Derek. I forget. I listen to so much different shows and national shows with Bucks on and all. But somebody recently said, even during that Super Bowl season, I mean, there were guys that fought each other. I mean, you know, not just, you know, yell at each other. I mean, they were rolling on the ground in the locker. You know what I mean? And you know, maybe this team is you know, been so, this organization been so worried about locker room chemistry and all that stuff. Maybe it's not bad to have a jerk or an a-hole in the locker room. You know what I mean? There's just not many a-holes on this team, and maybe that's what they need. I think, again, offensively, talking to some players, offensive linemen today, we saw Ali Marpet get a penalty for defending Jameis Winston. We've seen guys, you know, the offensive lineman Mankins get nasty at times during the games in between plays, you know, running their mouth a little bit, you know, manning up, in other words, is what I'm saying. We're starting to see that from the offense. I want to see it from the defense. And Will Golston had three personal fouls. You know, those aren't acceptable. They're 15-yard penalties. They cost your team. But he's got a little bit of an edge to him, a little bit of a nasty streak. But again, it's not like he has the resume where he can stand up and say, you know, things changed today. But I hope some point, somewhere it happens, because I think that's what it's going to take. I've said it before on your show and on the Bucks Brief podcast. You know, it's a mentality, and right now they have a losing mentality, and hopefully it changes at some point.
Well, and you, I tweeted out, and we talked about it a number of times, you know, you need the Hardy Nickerson impact. You need some guy who come in who has some sort of badge on, or whether he's carrying rings or Pro Bowls or whatever.
That's exactly what I mean by maybe it has to come in from somebody in the offseason or, you know, from the outside. And I think that's something Jason Light has got to absolutely – look for in the offseason, somebody like a Hardy Nickerson, you know, who says, you know, I want to play here, but we're going to do things my way. You know, get behind me and jump on my back, whatever you got to do. But you know, the bull spit stops today, you know, and I don't know there's anybody on the team to do that yet.
Well, there certainly hasn't been yet, so we'll see what happens moving forward. But I want to talk, I'm going to let you go, Marcus. I know you got stuff going on. I think you're still celebrating your birthday, which you should be doing. You shouldn't have been dragged into a damn podcast by some hack from Valrico. Oh, printed didn't happen. Okay, so you're 34 then. That's good. But the penalty talk has obviously been another rallying cry. It shows lack of discipline, and that reflects on the coach. And the Bucks are always penalized. And I went through and looked at each of the penalties here, and we're going to go through that for the last 15 or so minutes of the show. But your point is a good one, which is, well, while some penalties are unacceptable if you just look at them on paper, if I have an offensive lineman who's protecting my quarterback and he gets a 15-yard penalty because he's the one who gets called, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. Now, it's one of the things where I've got to evaluate it, right? Because he has a chance on the next play to hit this guy legally, right? But at the same time, sometimes you have to send a message. Now, Will's penalties, I went back and watched the tape. I couldn't see the kicking one, but I assume it really happened. You don't get called for kicking someone unless someone really got kicked, probably.
Right.
But the roughing the passer one was pretty close. I don't know if that was a legit call.
Crap. I mean, again, I say it's crap because Jameis was hit the same way on more than one occasion.
Sure.
The flag wasn't called that way. But anyway, I'm sorry.
No, but your point's a good one, right? And so I see our offensive linemen are clearing piles. What they're doing is they're chasing plays down. They want to get blocks downfield. And then they're clearing guys off of the runner, right? I want my offensive line doing that until they get called, right? Mm-hmm. And then you adjust. Now, I got a chance to meet Donovan Smith's family at the tailgate. They tailgated with us. And Ali Marpet's family. Ali Marpet's dad, I want him with me in a bar fight. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
So I like that sort of stuff. So if I start pulling those things out, I'm not that particularly concerned about it. And when you look at the impact that the penalties actually had on us, it wasn't critical. What had more of an impact to me was when guys were put in a position to make plays, dropped interception, not turning your head around when you're in single coverage on a wheel route, and you see your receiver's eyes go up, his hands go up, his shoulders go up, and you never, ever find the goddamn ball.
Right.
The coach has to put players in a position to make plays.
Yep.
At that point, it's on the player to make the play.
Yep. I'm completely with you on the penalty thing. You know, look, initially, emotionally, you yell, boy, that's 16 penalties, it seems undisciplined. But there are – you never want to say there's good penalties, but you never want to take the aggressiveness away. And I talked to Will Golston today, and it was off the record, so I'll share it with you since no one's listening but you and I. But he was coming out of the cafeteria. I was walking in the open locker room, and we talked. I've gotten to know Will over the last few years. Good kid, and I like him a lot personally. But, you know, basically, and again, and I want to get him in trouble or anything, but, you know, he's not going to change the way he plays. And I don't want him to. And I don't think fans do either. I mean, I don't think he did anything crazy egregious. Now, again, you still got flagged. Okay, now let me tell you what Ali Marpet said. Same thing. Semi off the record, okay? Is there a good penalty versus a bad penalty? He said, my mentality is always, I'm going to protect my quarterback. And I'll tell you something, and maybe I'm just dreaming because I'm a big Jameis guy or whatever. I think these guys, Jameis will sell out, right? I mean, Jameis will sell out his body. He doesn't mind taking a hit, blah, blah, blah. And he doesn't throw his guys under the bus. He was so well loved by his teammates. And I'm telling you, I talked to these guys, you know, at the East-West Shrine game, and I know a guy on the staff. And so, you know, I was at the pro day, and I talked to some of these guys off the record, too. Look, they would go to war for Jameis Winston. They'll do anything. You know, if he says run through a brick wall, they're going to run through a brick wall. He has that leadership. And so I think the Buccaneer offensive line is feeling that, too. Now, Ali said that's the way he's always been. But I'll Fab Five. I talked to Luke Stalker about it, and Scott's going to write about this in his Fab Five on Saturday. I mean, on Friday, and I put up some of these quotes that I got today from the players. You know, they definitely, you know, there's something about they want to fight a little extra harder for their guy because they see him fighting a little extra harder for them. If that makes any sense, okay?
It does.
But Ali said, you know, and I did ask him, and I turned off my recorder, so I probably shouldn't tell you what he said, but I will anyway. Since again, it's just you and I. But you know, I said, you know, is there an acceptable penalty? And he says no. He says no, I can't. You know what I mean? You can't. Even though he felt justified in what he did with Deshaun and probably felt that Deshaun flopped and got the call, you know, he's going to protect his guy no matter what. And I think that's great for this team. I think it's great for this offense. I think it's great for Jameis to see his guys doing that. And I asked Jameis about that in the press conference today, you know, I don't even remember if I asked him. It was brought up. I think I was the one that asked him. People think I'm crazy. I swear to God, I can't remember right now. But
I believe that you can't remember.
I'm 99% sure that I asked. I'll go back and listen as soon as we get done because now it's going to drive me crazy. But, you know, but yeah, he talked about that today in his press conference about, you know, guys having his back and how important that is. And I did ask him because I remember him saying, myself, Donovan, and Allie came into this together. So we better have a special bond. We better have a tight bond because we're in this together and it's us. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know that I've accomplished anything what I've just said in the 5 minutes, but I think you kind of get a grasp of what I'm trying to say, that I see something amongst this team as far as the camaraderie on this offense that I haven't seen in the previous 4 years, if that makes any sense at all.
It does. It does. And I don't know whether it was because you were going on this rant and you didn't want to say anything, but the stream actually went down momentarily. It looks like Ustream's having a problem, so this will be podcast only. But I do want to thank you for coming on the show, Mark. I'll let you get back to your life, and I'm going to try and wrap this up and let the folks know in the chat room what's going on. We've had nothing but problems tonight, so I appreciate you coming in, and I'll fix it all up in post-production.
Can we briefly remind folks that I picked the Buccaneers to score 30 points last Wednesday night?
We can. I don't remember. I had too much to drink.
No, unfortunately, I also predicted the Redskins would only score 17, so I kind of missed that a little bit. But I think my MVP guy and predictive MVP was Mike Evans, if I'm not mistaken. I may be wrong about that, too. But
again, I'm not really sure. I didn't take any notes because at that point I was too busy drinking. But I think that we all thought we were going to win, we didn't.
Wait. Remember our guy? Who was the
– Oh, it was Spike that was saying the Redskins were going to kill us.
Yeah, and so in the first half when it was 24-0, I was thinking – God, I wish I had Spike's number right now. You know what I mean?
You and me both, man. You and me both.
At the end of the game, I was like, oh, my God, I'm so glad he doesn't have my number. So, anyway, hopefully he's not listening.
It doesn't matter. We just got the stream back up. Hold on a second. Back up, guys. At any rate, you know, it's funny. Spike did think that everything was going to fall apart for sure. And it did, ironically enough. Just not the way he had predicted it would. This is the thing that's vexing about this team. And we had the same problem last year. And we can pretend we didn't, but we did. The team can be competitive because that's the way the NFL is. Parity dictates right. That the team can be competitive. This offense, and I was saying it right before you came on the show, this offense is as exciting as I've ever seen from a potential perspective. And I don't mean potential in the way we mean it as a bad word necessarily, right, which means you haven't done shit yet. I mean, they actually do stuff. Jameis had his best game as a pro, and it wasn't close. He looked absolutely phenomenal. He looked in charge. He was throwing the ball with velocity and with accuracy. The fact that we backed off a little bit, I don't like. I think we need...
How about his best play coming on a play that got called back on another penalty on Mike Evans on that offensive pass interference? I mean, you saw Jameis shake off guys, move, you know, and still fire the ball and throw a strike. I mean, again, people rag me about being a Florida State fan and why I'm high on Jameis, but see, I saw that out of Jameis for 2 years. That wasn't a common occurrence, but it wasn't anything that was surprising when Jameis did that because we saw him do that from time to time at Tallahassee. Those are the things, and I think that's where you're getting at. There is a pleasant excitement seeing this. Now, again, I said it to somebody today. Jameis may have another Carolina game, and he might have two more this year. I don't know. You know what I mean? We'll see. But I think he's learning, and I certainly believe he's getting better. And I'll be the first to admit, I really expected him to start off with a little bit hotter than he did, particularly in that first game. And at one point early in the year, I was thinking, boy, this is a little scary. I hear I go out on a limb on this guy. But the last two games, granted, they weren't against the Seattle Seahawks defense or Carolina's by any stretch. But he's shown some things that have me really, really excited about the future of this offense.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. At this point, with the Ustream dropping, I'm going to end the podcast. I'm going to let you go. I'm tired of fighting this shit. But I appreciate you coming on. I'll clean this all up in post. I am very excited about Jameis Winston. I'm very excited about the offense for you podcast listeners who get this, who are not listening live and being punished for your insolence. Offensively.
Can I say one more quick thing?
You can say whatever you want, man.
All right. So, you know, and again, what this means in the grand scheme of things, I don't know that people care. You know, I mean, ultimately they want the team to win. But, you know, again, I can't reiterate enough about, you know, again, whatever people feel about what Jameis did in school and you know, is he still capable of making some knucklehead mistakes, you know, outside of football here in Tampa? You know, yeah, he's a 21-year-old kid. Things happen. I don't know. I hope not. I hope those things are behind him. But, you know, I try and make a point every day in open locker room, or at least once a week, even after his press conference, to just talk to him, even if it's for 30 seconds, just about other things. Not necessarily, you know, I asked him about something today, and he gave me an answer. And then a few minutes later, I was like, do you mind if I tweet that? And he asked that I didn't. He said, yeah, I appreciate it if you don't. And then he came back and stopped me and goes, hey, I just want to tell you, I appreciate you asking me before you did that. And, again, that's not patting myself on the back, whatever. The point is Jameis does not sit in his locker, and maybe he will one day if he ends up winning a Super Bowl, blah, 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 and thinks he's the greatest thing in the world. He certainly has a supreme confidence, but he's a good guy. I mean, again, look, I mean, Bill Cosby was a great guy, you know what I mean, by all accounts. But, you know, we know how that panned out. You never really know a person 100%, you know what I mean? But
sure.
At the same time, you know, for just general fans who like kind of the inside peek in the locker room, you know, he's good. He seems like a really, really good guy. And people like this guy. I mean, his teammates are gravitating more and more towards this guy. And the more games he has, like he did Sunday, the more popular he's going to be among his teammates. And I don't know. I just wanted to throw that in. Again, I try and talk to him. And just remember, we talk about Florida State. Maybe we talk about, you know, cars or something like that. We just talk about something just in general. And, again, he's not a jerk. He doesn't blow you off. He doesn't act like, you know what I mean, hey, I'm the number one draft pick. Screw you. I already talked in the press conference. But he's that way with everybody, you know. And that's one of the things talking to former players that played with him in Tallahassee, a friend of mine that was a walk-on player, as a matter of fact, said, you know, that's the thing about Jameis. He makes the walk-on guys feel like, you know, the stars of the team, too. He doesn't treat anybody differently. And you know, those are intangibles. And some of the things that made Jason Light become attracted to Jameis Winston, obviously the on-the-football field is important, too. But, you know, those little tidbits and stories are the things that have the organization excited overall about this guy. So, again,
well,
I don't know if anybody cares about
no,
that.
No, people do care. People do care, Mark. And fans are getting mad, and I get that, and I understand your point about the people should listen to the fans more, and God knows I'm one of the fans, but I've just gotten used to no one giving a shit what fans think. And I've gotten very jaded about fans' opinions because I don't think many of them are informed, and it pisses me off, and they think I'm full of shit, and that's okay, too. But when it comes to the team that I love, that I still support, even though I dislike the organization intensely, I am excited for the first time in a long time about our offense.
Right.
And I'm very excited about what Jameis is doing. That's one of the reasons why on that second-to-last possession, when we're inside the five-yard line, the fact that leaving the ball in his hands wasn't one of the choices bothers me.
Yep.
If there's, like we talked about before, you need someone who has that will to win, who's going to demand it from his teammates, this sort of thing. The only player I've seen consistently do that is him. Rookie or not, I give zero shits about whether he's a rookie. He wants to win. When Charles Sims lateraled that ball, Jameis blew a gasket.
He did. I don't know how many people noticed that, but absolutely. He lost his mind.
Yeah, he went nuts. Right? So, and now, we all know there's the very low likelihood that if we got to the line, we could have spiked the ball and tried a field goal, but that was exactly what we were supposed to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
But it, you know, and those are the things, again, I say it's a blessing and a curse being a Florida State fan because I fight the bias thing, but I also say it gives me a benefit because I saw every play this guy made, didn't make, so on and so forth, including his spring game. I mean, I saw everything the guy did at Florida State, and some of the things Buccaneer fans are seeing, you seeing him blow a gasket there, these are the things that he did, you know, a lot. And again, it's a passion he has for winning. And I'm not knocking Josh Freeman, but you talk about opposite ends of the spectrum personality-wise, the way they conduct themselves on the field. And I'm not saying Josh was wrong. He was more of a laid-back guy. Jameis is more of an intense guy. You know what I mean? I mean, Joe Montana was a laid-back guy and so on and so forth. So, there's examples both ways of being successful quarterbacks in the league. But me being the hot-tempered, Southern male, I like to see a little scrappiness. I like to see that nastiness sometimes and that attitude and that, I'm better than you kind of a guy attitude. And Jameis, and you know this, even casual Buccaneer fans and non-Florida State fans know that, he and Jimbo butted heads on numerous occasions. But as a Florida State fan, I had zero problems with that because, again, that showed me the guy wanted to win. And even when he pushed the official out of the way in the game, I don't remember if that was Georgia Tech last year or not,
Yep.
I mean, again, the intensity, we see that from the guy and the will to win. And those are the things that do excite me and give me hope that at some point this franchise's fortunes are going to turn around.
Well, I sure hope they do, man. And, again, I appreciate your perspective on Jameis. I appreciate your perspective in general. Folks who don't know how to find you, get your ass over to PeterReport.com. He is the editor-in-chief, Mark Cook, the ginger badass, at MarkCook1970 and at PeterReport.com. Anything special you guys are doing that people should know about?
Well, you don't let me talk about it, so I can't mention what's going on Sunday. But
nope.
But people can go to the website and check it out. But, no, I mean,
you guys should
really
start canceling them soon, right, as people start not being interested in the Bucks? That's the way it works, right?
I don't know, man. I have to admit the food there is excellent.
Oh, the food is excellent, no doubt. No doubt. The view's better at mine.
Well, I can't argue that. That's just Jackie's working. I'm not going to argue with that a bit. But anyway, if we could get Jackie a job at the place that I'm not allowed to mention, that would be awesome. But
definitely look into that.
nothing really, major upcoming. I mean, I think Scott Fab is going to be really good this week. I don't know how much I could say and not say, but I know what he's got planned and some things. I think it's going to be really good and really interesting for Buccaneer fans. Whether they agree with Scott's opinion on Fire Lovey or not, it doesn't matter. I like his passion.
Sure.
He does try and bring up, stats to back up his case. And, look, the guy works the locker room like a politician. I have to admit, I've been doing this with him for 5 years, and I sit back and watch how he does it. And, a guy will be, Joe Holly today was talking for 10 minutes with the media, and how PR brushes, okay, that's enough. Final
yeah.
questions. Guy just rolls right in after that with PR looking at him saying, what are you doing? And spends another 5 minutes with the guy. And the thing is, nobody seems to get mad. They're cool with it. He's just good. He's been doing it 20 years, man. And so I think that's one of the reasons he's able to deliver good content is he's got a good relationship with the players, with former coaches, former players, all of these things. And it really helps him. And he's seen it. He's done this for over 20 years. So he's seen a lot. I mean, Sam Weiss was the coach when he started, so he's seen a lot over those last 20 years. So I just encourage people to definitely check out the Fab Five on Friday. That'll be good stuff. And hopefully things go a little bit better this Sunday, but we'll see.
Well, I'm not traveling there, so maybe we'll win. I know we've got a big group going up there, and I know you got a group getting together on Sunday. We do as well. Hopefully Buck fans will join the happiness again. But until then, we can follow you on Twitter and interact at MarkCook1970. Mark, thanks as always, man. Take care. I'll talk to you this week.
All right, man. You got to take care. Thanks for having me on, Derek.
See you, Mark. Mark Cook from PeterReport.com. Sorry about we had some technical problems with the stream. Hell, for all I know, they're still happening. Ustream is just taking a dump on us from time to time. We got people in here that are sticking it out, though, which is nice of you guys. The Ustream does let you chat, King Brutal. The thing is, we haven't been using their chat, so we may start using it at some point with the social stream piece. I'm not sure. We'll start screwing around with it. But I want to thank you guys for tuning in tonight. I know the GOP debate and the World Series and all that stuff going on and general malaise bordering on anger about the Buccaneers. My summation is going to be as follows. We did everything right except for we let them win, right? We dominated statistically. Our defense has got to get better, no doubt. I don't think that firing coaches is the way to get a foundation built. I think that you have to have some consistency. And now Mark brings up a good point, so do you. You don't stay in a failing marriage. You don't do these sorts of things. I just don't believe fundamentally that Lovie Smith no longer knows how to coach. I don't believe he's, quote-unquote, lost the locker room. I don't believe any of those things. I believe that some stability is going to be necessary in order to build a franchise again that can be competitive for years. And I think that Lovey's the right guy. Do I think there are going to be tweaks along the way? Maybe a Gil Bird, maybe some of the position coaches? Possibly. I don't know, right? But I don't think changing the head coach makes sense. I don't think calling for it this quickly makes any sense. I think that the progress we've seen is solid. It's not been on defense. Certainly the injuries haven't helped, but everyone has injuries. We've got to get past that. But at the end of the day, these players have got to do what they're told to do. They've got to execute. We've got to be able to stop making the same mistakes over and over again. With regards to Atlanta, I've almost given up the idea of trying to figure out how the hell things are going to happen in this world with regards to the Bucks, because I never expect us to be up 24-0 in Washington. That said, I do believe this team can compete with anyone on the field at any given time. If Lovie is to stay the coach of the Bucks, I think he's got to use this as his inflection point. He's got to get his team to rally around him and rally around the concept that they can become better. And you've got to go have this game. Now, if we go and beat Atlanta, this doesn't change anyone's perspective, because Atlanta hasn't been playing very well. Even though they played well early and their record's good, they haven't been world beaters. So here's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. You go up there and you lose to Atlanta, and it's just fire Lovie some more. Atlanta's not even that good a team, and they beat you, blah, blah, blah. Right? If Atlanta hands 56-7 on you, then it's even worse. If you go up and beat Atlanta, it doesn't matter because they haven't been playing well. They've got some injuries. They've been struggling. They've been skipping by. The thing that changes this is not just a win. It is wins. It is a win streak. That's why last week was so damn important. You get that win. You get to 500. You have a chance to get to a winning record in Atlanta. That's a different scenario. We've got to get this team to that point. I do believe there has to be change. I think that the change does have to come to Coach Lovie's perspective. I think he has got to not be as stubborn as Coach Dungy was. That got him fired. And Dungy got fired after winning 10 games a year and going to the goddamn playoffs. Didn't matter he's a great coach. Didn't matter he resurrected the franchise. None of that mattered. Lovie hasn't done any of that here. So as good a coach as I think he is, won't matter. You have got to win and win a lot. And then once you win and win a lot, you've got to win playoff games. And then once you win playoff games, you've got to eventually compete and potentially win a Super Bowl. That's the way this works. It is very much a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately league. So whether I like it or not intellectually means absolutely nothing. A path that I can almost assure you won't get you there over the long run is changing your staff every 2 years. So what do I expect out of Atlanta next week? I expect continued improvement from the offense. Logan Mankins looked like he had the best game I've seen him have. The offensive line in general is coming together. Are they perfect? No. Tight end position should get bolstered with ASJ coming back, but remember, he's coming back off of an injury. He will not be in great condition. He is also a liability in blocking. But God, we're going to need a receiver. So if I can go into a three-wide receiver set with him in the slot, I'll do that. He's just got to know the plays well enough. Now we've got Dye and Humphreys coming up, so that gives us four. I think we can run a tackling dummy out there as well, though I wouldn't have a problem necessarily putting Sims split out from time to time. I agree. NFL Osfi, if you're not following him on Twitter, do that, because he's going through the game breakdown now, doing a great job, as always, at NFL Osfi. And he agreed with something we said before. Pulling Dougie out just because it's not his series doesn't make sense. You should not have to force Charles Sims, and that's not a slight to Charles Sims. What do I see happening in Atlanta? I'm going to be the eternal optimist, because that's who I am. The Bucks almost turned the corner this week. You could feel it. They just couldn't hold it together. When that quicksand started, when they got the first foot in the quicksand, they couldn't get their leg out. But they showed what they could do. I use the analogy about Michael Jordan when he dunked from the free throw line. I'm a huge basketball guy. I know it doesn't look like I'm a basketball guy, but I am. Sometimes people need to be shown that you can do it. If you're a shooter, if you're a basketball shooter, sometimes you go on a cold streak, right? The old saying is, you know, if you're a shooter, shoot to your If you're on a cold streak, shoot till you're on, or something like that. I can't remember right now for some reason. I'm tired. If you're on, shoot. If you're off, shoot till you're back on, I think it is. But when you're off, sometimes you got to go make a layup and prove that there's a basket there, right? You got to prove that you're capable of it. 24-0 is a pretty damn resounding, we're capable of it. You choked. Go put two halves together. Give me a 48-0. Do I think that they can shut down Atlanta to 0 points? No, it's unlikely. Absolutely unlikely. But that's what you demand. You demand that level of performance. You demand that level of accountability. You have to be pissed when you fuck up. Right? When you bite so hard that Kirk Cousins dances into the end zone. And I love Will Golston as a person. I think he's tremendous. I've always liked Will. I think he's got a ton of talent. But damn it, Will, that's your responsibility. Not to mention the safety bit to the middle too, so he wasn't there to help either. Do your damn job is the moral of this story. Everyone. And that goes for everyone. Coach Lovie, do your damn job. Learn how to use timeouts. So, I am going to predict a victory. I am going to predict a significant victory. I do think the offense is going to continue to improve. I think the offense is going to look good on this turf. I think the offense is going to put up 31 points. I do think we're going to win 31-17. I don't think that's going to do anything to make people stop asking for Lovie to be fired, but I don't care. So I thank you guys for tuning in. We'll clean up the podcast, get that published tonight, and we'll figure out between now and the next show what happened with Ustream. I don't know if the stream's still up or not. It's still up. That's good. But until next time, definitely follow us on Twitter at WhatTheBuck. You can follow us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/WhatTheBuck. And we'll get some more articles out there. And we will see you at the watch party. If you're in town and you're not going to Atlanta, we'll get a big group going to Atlanta to celebrate with the ATL Bucks crew, who did a great job with their big tailgate. But we will be out at the Wing House 8001 Hillsborough Avenue with Jackie and all of the brand ambassadors trying to support our Bucks, and God knows we're going to try and get a win. So for everyone on this side of the fence, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. I am Old School, and I am out of here.